just made it to Budapest Airport flying EasyJet today, which makes me a bit uneasy because I'm not sure if they will check the weight of my bag. 64 things, but let's see. The gate will be announced in about 5 to 10 minutes, so I have a bit of time just to chill. One thing that came to mind on the way here is that airplanes have a lot to do with Byzantine fault tolerance. It's the way airplane systems evaluate their sensors is often also by maturity. So typically you have 3 or more redundant systems for each and every sensor on an airplane. Of course, many sensors that work together in order to produce one result. And the way the airplane system decides which outcome to use is also by a Byzantine fault tolerance system. It's definitely an interesting setup. Gate A19 has to be an outdoor gate, or at least you walk through this outdoor area. This is where I'm headed. So I got worried for a quick second. You back here. They're checking everyone's bags. They do not check backpacks. That was one of the main reasons why I switched to a backpack. We're back on the ground in Berlin. Cheers.
I've always been kind of looking at the blockchain space and trying to figure out where it's going to go and what are the dominant design paradigms or what are the dominant design choices that we're going to see provide a competitive advantage to different platforms to allow them to move forward and succeed. Dfinity has made some of the best choices, I think, or all of the best choices, in my opinion. This presentation specifically, first of all, it's full of a bunch of new stuff. It's a bunch of old presentations kind of chopped together. To really understand it, if you think about the choices that you make when you set up your hosting infrastructure, and then you think of the consequences of those choices, none of them are appealing. No matter what you do, your data can be stolen, and your infrastructure may collapse, right? Or may break down at some point. And that means intermittent service provision for you. And it's certainly suboptimal. And so if you outsource to, say, Amazon Web Services, which has a pretty good record of uptime, you know you're still going to have some downtime. You know your data still may be stolen and your system penetrated. But you also know that Amazon Web Services may choose to just deny you service at any time, leaving you without this critical partner. And this is a business dependency. And one of the clear choices in the way that we define business in the future is not relying on other businesses to allow us to do business. And again, when I say business, really, this could be the provision of any service that any of us use. All of these things rely on a network of organizations to provision. And the more organizations that are required to provide that service, the more frail or the more intermittent we should expect that service to be in terms of its availability. So let's imagine now that we have this completely agnostic programming interface or this completely agnostic execution environment. What this now lets us do is write one program that can run not only on your phone, but also in the cloud, and literally share resources between these two environments. So what, say, instead of having an application downloaded on your phone, you just had a little icon and a pointer to where that application lived in its cloud hosting. And then what we can do quite wonderfully is every time we open the application, download an interface that is likely to be a new one or an updated one or one that's been improved by UX experts and actually connects to a new, more advanced, possibly updated application in the background without us ever having to worry about updating ourselves. And this is one of the most kind of compelling visions for a new application and programming paradigm. And you know, you can imagine that this gives us the ability to host or perform extremely heavy computation in the cloud, while our kind of measly little processor on our phone just deals with the graphics display and our storage just handles kind of critical user data or login data. And yes, and one of the benefits we can imagine, of course, is never having to update an app again. In the case of the threshold signature, we wind up with 3 different pieces of a verifiable signature, each on their own, completely meaningless. These are just pointless, useless pieces of data. But if we can combine 2 of those together, 2 of those 3 pieces, we can create a verifiable signature. And this is the magic, right? It means that you can have imagine a board or a jury. So you've got a jury and you need a unanimous verdict. This would be a different threshold of certainty. You need a unanimous verdict in order to convict someone. And you want to digitally sign a document, a digital document, that has the verdict on it. And say you get your 11 signatures, but there's just one holdout and they never sign, then that validatable signature will never be able to be created. It will be just the same as if no one signed at all. And this is the magic of threshold signatures. But they have one more trick up their sleeve, and that is that no matter which group sign, you still wind up with exactly the same signature at the end. And that is really pretty tripped out. The idea that you could have, provided you just have more than half of these participants, each of which have a weird different part of the signature. Now, you know, it's all random jumbled, you know, it looks like just total randomness. It's gobbledygook. But you put it together and you get this the same signature no matter what group. It's pretty amazing. And this is at the core of how we generate randomness. Is this making sense so far?
I flew to Berlin today to participate in the Definity meetup organized by this guy who you all know, Moritz. We decided to do a spontaneous quick Q&A. Moritz, you had a couple questions for me.
Yes, first of all of us are keen to find out when the mainnet is finally going live.
Yeah, so roadmap, as I'm sure you all know from any kind of technology project, is a thing that's constantly moving, but I can update you guys on the current target. So we're currently working on a private SDK, which we will hopefully be able to share with a wider audience in about a couple months. So that's when you guys can first get your hands on Definity technology and start developing apps. The way it works is it will be something that you can run on your local machine, so there's no network necessary, but it will give you all the environment that your applications will have once the network goes live. So that's like the first milestone that we're working towards. Then second milestone, probably in Q3, so maybe September, is to launch a testnet. So a testnet where you can deploy applications and test stuff. And then fingers crossed, we're hoping to go live with the mainnet in Q4 of this year. Personally, I believe it's going to be February of next year, because every big milestone so far has happened in February. First ICO, second fundraise, and adding a lot of people to the team this year. And so I my gut feeling just tells me it's going to be February. Awesome. Let's see.
So the next question is, what is the marketing strategy of Definity?
We do very little marketing, right? Especially if you look at other projects, like you find a lot less stuff about Definity just because we've always focused on building great tech versus great marketing strategies. Nevertheless, or maybe especially because we do it like that, we have quite a big community. We have a lot of people that are looking forward to see Definity come live and are asking more and more questions. To your point, how do we think we're going to incentivize people to come over? I think one is we believe that we want to tap into the largest group of developers out there, which is web developers. I think there's various initiatives. One is using WebAssembly. We believe that's technology that will be easy to learn. And even if you're not going to build on Definity for the rest of your life, learning WebAssembly is something that you're going to be able to use when you go back to just the browser. And the second thing is I'm personally working on something that we call the Definity Academy, which is maybe 20-day course, but small segments each day, where we go from knowing nothing about blockchain technology or the distributed decentralized space to building your first WebAssembly app and deploying it on Definity. So that's something that I and the team are working on right now. There's no release date yet. We hope that we'll have a first version out in a couple months. We're just working on really, really good content, and we hope that that will itself attract a lot of people.
Are there any more plans on doing like scholarships and stuff like that?
If you have great ideas, if you have ideas for what you want to build or research, then just get in touch with us. I think we're always looking for great people. We're trying to expand our team by a lot in the next 12 months. And then especially if you have ideas for applications that you want to build or stuff that you want to experiment with in terms of dApps, get in touch with me. We are working on a developer portal where you can formally submit ideas. But even before then, just get in touch with me and I'll make it happen. Thanks, Moritz, for organizing this meetup. I've had a great time and hopefully there will be many more. All right, guys. Cheers.
Bye-bye.